Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to HR Latte, your first cup of talent management whipped to perfection.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to HR Latte this morning. This is a special edition of HR Latte. I get to interview my brother, and as it is, he has yet to call in, and I'm going to give him a pass because he travels a great deal, and I believe presented at TEDx last week, so I'm excited to get to talk to him about that as well this morning. I am sure that he will get through in just a minute. He's just messaged me and told me that it keeps cutting him off, so I'm going to try and text him the number again. I am very excited about the series that I've been conducting this month, and I'm hoping that I'll get to talk to Andrew about this. He has had a great deal of opportunity in his life to really, and he has just joined me, so let me click him on. Hey, Andrew, thanks for joining us this morning. Sorry about the hard time getting in.
Well, yeah, I'm sorry. I'd like to be a little bit earlier, so I apologize for being late.
That's okay. We're jumping right in, and I've been talking about the series that I'm doing on positivity in the workplace. We've had a great opportunity to talk to several folks in the HR space that are leaders that have used positivity to benefit the workforce that they corral as HR professionals. And I thought that it would be good to add a twist to this to talk about leadership. So before we jump into what the meat of this program is going to be about, I would love for you to give us a quick overview, introduction of yourself, if you could.
Sure. Well, I'm sure the audience might have recognized by the last name that I'm your brother. So I think that's the most exciting piece of my introduction for me.
Aww.
Is that I have a famous sister that does a great radio program out there and a lot of other things that maybe even your listeners don't know about. But in my work, I get to work with organizations and people, and I help them answer two questions. The first question is, and both of these questions are on their minds all the time, the first question is, how am I going to grow the revenues or the profits in my business? And the second question is, how am I going to grow myself and the people that I lead? And so naturally, because I'm a psychologist, my focus tends to drift towards the behaviors of the people and how we can help the people. And then as we do that, the revenues increase also. So I'm pretty excited about the work that I do because I get to focus on how we help people and make things better for them.
So I think I heard through the grapevine that you did another TED Talk last week or the week before. Is that correct?
I did. It hasn't posted yet, and I'm a little bit surprised, but it should be posted.
Oh, I have my ways. I have my ways. So where did you present?
In up in the high desert in Apple Valley, California. There was There was a high school student that spearheaded a TEDx event, and he did a wonderful job. It was a magnificent job, and it was held on the campus of Granite Hills High School. And the theme was to be or not to be, so it was right in my wheelhouse.
Oh, I love that. Yeah, I've had the opportunity to watch your the one that you did for Greenville several times. I have a friend that works with the Greenville TEDx organization, and we talked about you when he was on the show, my friend Paul Hebert. So it's exciting to have a famous brother. I'm not nearly as famous as you, but it's fun to know where our beginnings were from, the great parents that we had, and how we've been able to move forward in life with positivity throughout our lives. We both faced our share of adversity, and I believe that part of that adversity that we face is also a great deal of growth, better than any degree we could ever achieve from any academic organization. And I feel like those are the things where you learn the most about life and about yourself. And so I'm excited to get into the meat of what I want to talk about, which is developing leadership and positivity and how that affects ultimately your legacy, which is a great deal that you talk about. I know that you run events with your Telios Corp. So if you could tell us a little bit about those events and what those entail. I was lucky enough last year to participate in a 5-month-long version, and I don't know if you've adapted it or changed it, but I know this is something you've been doing for several years. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. We started the process in 2006, and it has grown tremendously even since last year. We actually no longer offer the 5-month version of the program.
Okay.
Now it's 12 months. And what we found through the 5 months was that right when we were getting started, it was time for us to break. And a lot of people said, hey, we want to go deeper in this. And so the 12 months gives us an opportunity to really focus for the first 5 to 7 months with a small group, and then the remaining 5 to 7 months one-on-one, and really start to apply what we've learned in the group setting. And it's pretty powerful experience to take a look at your life, whether you're in the beginning part of it or the middle part of your life, and think about what is it that's meaningful to you and how are you going to live according to your values, at least what you say is valuable. And so this journey, what we call is an expedition, and we call it an inventure because it's a journey to really the core of your being, is an opportunity to increase your self-knowledge, which all around makes you a better person on both your professional and your personal responsibilities. And so I'm very excited about it. I really love to work with people at the midpoint of their lives and who are asking themselves a very big question: what's next? And how am I going to live my life? And what will my legacy be? And how will I continue to lead?
Right. And can we really shift what our future looks like, or how we perceive our future, do we actually have to change what we're doing? Is it just a shift in thought, or do we have to change further beyond emotional or mental?
Yeah, I think you know that I'm not a big fan of the word change, at least when it comes to personal. And I don't think any of us really change, because change comes from the outside. So obviously in a business setting, we need to make changes, or if something outside of our business setting changes, we need to make changes. But personally, we do things because we want to grow. And so for me, I'm always thinking about, okay, how do I want to grow, and in what way do I want to grow? And growth comes from inside of me, and it inspires me. And so I think it is possible to grow. But what I'm coming to appreciate, because like I said, I've been at this real personal journey since 2006, is it's very difficult to both grow and change. And
right.
So we have to want it really bad, and there are a lot of forces that are weighing against us as we grow older that make us tired and make us not as engaged in the game. And so growth doesn't happen without having a real powerful purpose in our life.
Do you
and
like
that's what
develop?
I spend a lot of time booking. Go
do
ahead.
You like
Sorry.
The word develop or evolve
yes.
better than change? Okay.
Yes, I do.
Good.
Yeah, I like the word develop, because I think it's growing. So I probably am a little bit nitpicky about the word change as I can be, because I try to focus in on what I'm really thinking about. And so many of these words mean so many things. I think one of your friends, you know, he like actually bans words that mean so many of these
yeah,
things.
Yeah, he does.
And so,
Animal.
Shout out to Animal. Yeah, shout out to Animal.
There you go. That's true. So tell us about what you have done to create positivity for yourself then.
This is a really powerful question to me, because as you mentioned, we all have adversity. We're all faced with it throughout our lives. And it's easy to become discouraged, and it's easy to become depressed. And especially when the weight of the world comes upon you. I've recently started talking about an experience that I had 4 years ago in May. And so on the 17th of May in 2011, I was diagnosed with leukemia. And when I went to the doctor, you know, I didn't have any idea what this meant. I'm a pretty healthy person. At the time, I was running Ironman triathlons and doing lots of things
right.
in really good shape. So I was fairly shocked by it, but my body didn't feel sick. And so I didn't know what it meant, and I was in a bit of a shock when the doctor told me. But when I got into the car and turned on my iPad and looked up the diagnosis, you know, I discovered that 50% of the people are dead within 5 years. And that was very troublesome to me, because I didn't know how to look at that. I didn't know how to focus on that. And I recall, you know, being really discouraged and really not thinking that a lot of things that I had been doing really mattered anymore. But a lesson from my mother, really, our mother, really caught me back on track. And that was when I used to argue with her about making my bed as a child, she taught me that, you know, when you make your bed, and it doesn't matter, you're just going to get back into it, but you make it so that you can accomplish something and so that you can feel good about yourself first thing in the morning. And so I didn't want to make my bed. I didn't see the point. And of course I'm speaking symbolically, you know, there were
right.
a lot of things. Yeah, I didn't want to go run. Why should I take care of my body? You know, why should I do these things? Because I was discouraged. But I found that as I engaged in the things that I loved, I was able to gain a really tremendous perspective. And that perspective is simply this: whatever happens, happens. It's going to happen no matter what you can do. But I do have control over how I live my life. I do have control over the choices that I make. And so I found that when I took that control back, then I was positive. I was able to say, okay, I can't, this is the cards that I'm dealt, but I can stand up right now and I can move forward. It's still a pretty emotional topic for me, but when I talk about it now, I own it. I'm not discouraged by it or depressed by it. I get to own it.
Well, given, and you and I have not talked about this in a while, but given that that's 4 years ago, you know, and your diagnosis or your first initial reading of about leukemia, it was 5 years. How are you feeling today when you look at that? Are you still
yeah.
remaining positive? Are you still, or is there this shadow now or this cloud?
Well, I think the cloud is gone. It did follow me around for a while. But again, what I decided was, you know, whatever happens, happens. I made my peace with the life that I'm living. And then the way I turned my focus to was that, you know, I'm going to live a positive, optimistic, healthy, and happy life. And it's funny, when we do that, our body responds appropriately. And when I went to the doctor last, he basically said to me, you know, Mr. Thorne, you're an alien. And I said, what does that mean? And he said, well, your body's not responding the way we would expect it to respond. And I said, well, that's good news. What is my diagnosis or prognosis now? And he said, well, you know, 25% chance you'll need treatment in 5 years, 35% chance you'll need treatment in 10, 95% chance you'll die
wow.
of something else. And
wow.
so I just believe that,
That's
I just believe
news.
That, you know, that I, that even, I know that there are a lot of positive minded people who get cancer or get some diagnosis and they want to think their way out of it, but they still succumb to it. And that might be my fate too, but what I found is those people, as they go along in life, they're just so happy that it doesn't matter what actually happens in the end.
Right.
They're happy while they're here.
So I've seen this question posed. Would you rather know you're going to die and when? You know, would you rather pick the date and time you're going to die, or would you rather just have it happen without you knowing? So now that you've actually had this in front
yeah.
of you, how would you answer that?
It's hard to answer without a lot of emotion, but I consider it a really good gift. A really remarkable gift to have had this happen to me in my life. At first, I couldn't see it as such, but life is very precious, and we live with a very false sense of security
we sure
and
do.
Control. And control, and I had that taken away from me, and so I get to live my life with my eyes wide open, knowing that at any time my body could succumb to whatever's going on inside of it, and I could not have the health that I enjoy. And so knowing that gets me out of bed in the morning and causes me to do things that I might be a little bit lazy about, because I might think I have another day to do that sometime. But now I don't even think about that. I just get up and go and do what I want to do. And that makes me happy. So it's interesting, because living with a positive output and being happy really generates more positivity and more happiness in our life.
Well, you're a great example of personal positivity and how it can have an effect. So let's shift gears a bit and talk about developing positive leadership skills. Now, I know that you work with many leaders all over the world, leaders and managers and supervisors. Everybody has a different definition for what a leader is versus what a manager is versus what a supervisor, a CEO, a president of an organization. How much is a leader really responsible for what happens within the workforce, developing a happy workforce? Do they have a great deal of responsibility? Can they have more of an impact than many do?
Oh, I think so. What I choose to call them are people, right? So they're managers, they're leaders, they're responsible individuals inside an organization, they're leaders. So I call them people. And as people, we have an opportunity. And I think what's really fascinating about leadership is, we've really come a long ways. Before, being a leader meant that you had to know how to tell people what to do. And now, and you know, Peter Drucker predicted this several years ago. He said the leader of the future would need to know how to ask. And
oh,
I find that that's a real important piece, is that we have to know how to ask. And so really that empowers me at no matter what station I'm at in the game. If I'm on the front line, if I'm on the top line, I have power to ask. So I can be a leader at any station, and I really like that. And I think that once we start realizing that leadership is a personal responsibility first, and the action that comes with that responsibility is to make things better for others. So it doesn't really matter what my formal responsibility is. I can do that every day. I can personally be responsible for myself, and I can invite others into a world where it's better because I made it better.
And that speaks to something that I adhere strongly to, is the 360-degree leader. You can be in middle management. You can be somebody that's working the front line and still have such an impact on the people whose lives you touch on a daily basis in day-to-day operations, or your family, friends, the people you work with. And I agree with you 100%. What is the most important thing to remember when you speak to leaders? I know you spend a great deal of time in South America and really all over the world, and you're talking about developing positive leadership and how to change or create a greater company culture. Is it true that this does have an impact then on company culture? It seems to be a buzzword these days. There's not a lot of meat to the word culture anymore. You know, it's just something that somebody throws out. We have a great culture, or they have a horrible culture, or how we hire for culture, we hire for fit. Will you fit into this culture, right? So how do you think that happens? How do you believe that a leader can have an impact on culture and how the organization? Let's talk about the guy at the top.
Yeah.
How do they have an impact?
Yeah, so the woman or man at the top has a great responsibility, again, to oversee a lot of different things that are going on in the business. And unfortunately, they generally get caught up in the profitability side of the business, because that's where they're getting the most pressure. Either if it's a small business, they're getting that so they can keep their doors open, and if it's a very large business, they're getting that from the stakeholders. Tremendous amounts of pressure, just things that really push on them to perform. And performance doesn't really build a culture. We don't perform because because the culture tells us to perform. We have a culture that then engages us. And so the leader at the top, when they're pushing on performance, they generally then take a sidestep away from development initiatives. And development initiatives is what drives a culture. And so just figuring out two things. I think the first thing is a leader at the top always needs to remember rule number 6, which is don't take yourself so seriously. And if they can remember that, then they can really remember who they are and what put them in that position. And as they start to remember that, they start thinking about the people, and they start figuring out how are we going to develop these people. And as the development is what drives performance. Performance doesn't drive performance. And so I find that when I think about people, and it was kind of funny because there was a great illustration of this in the movie I watched with my little girls over the weekend called The Beautician and the Beast, that was with Fran Feinberg, who was the nanny. And she was, in Timothy Dalton, of all people, was the role of the ogre or the beast. And when he started just walking around and saying hello to people and learning their names and caring about what their troubles were, then his country, which he was the dictator of a country, his country started to improve. His country started to have life in it again. His country started to have economic success. And that's really all we need to remember, is that we're working with people every day, and business isn't what sustains us. People sustain us. And so we have to be really driving into how do we make things better for people here. That's why we're in business. Every business idea was to make something better for somebody else. And so if we just remember that same thing applies inside the business, then we start to develop a culture that we can't define. Like you said, it's a buzzword, but we know it when we feel it.
Right. And I love how you started that response. I said the guy at the top, and you immediately said the woman or the man at the top. I'm a little ashamed of myself. However, I do use guy for both men and women, you know, when I say, hey, you guys, or so. So I'm going to give myself a break on that one. But thank you, Andrew,
guys generic. I'm just running for office now, so I'm really careful about that.
apparently. So I know throughout your travels and your work, you've met several individuals and different leaders along the way. And do you have any examples of folks that have developed better leadership skills and how those leadership skills have brought greater success to their businesses?
Yeah. So when you talk about a 360 leader, really what that means is that I have eyes upon everything, even my weaknesses. So I understand my weaknesses. And the best leaders that I have dealt with are people that not only understand their weaknesses, but they're very comfortable with them. So they don't have to feel like they have to fix everything about their leadership style. They can instead engage their team around them and really dig in and build upon that. And so I have two people that I think have done a really remarkable job with this. One was a gentleman by the name of Eduardo Cortez, who was a regional president for Merck, the big pharmaceutical company. And he just did a remarkable job at engaging others and not fretting about his weaknesses. He didn't like them to know about them, but when they did, he wasn't afraid to just say, yeah, well, this is why you're on the team, because you can do this
right
so much better than me. And so he wasn't as comfortable as others. But you know, then I dealt with another guy from a pretty big company called Vubiquity. They changed their name since I dealt with them. They used to be called Avail TVN. But in Vubiquity, there was a leader by the name of Ramu Potterazu. And Ramu was really good at acknowledging his weaknesses and just engaging the team to help them. And he did it in ways that made us want to help him. And I think this is, you know, part of rule number six is not taking yourself so seriously. So many leaders of the day, all they want to do is cover up what they're not good at. And so consequently, they never get any help around it. And it's more tragic on the front line, because we see it happening at the top. We try to cover it up at the front line. And when we cover up our weaknesses, the primary tool for covering them up is to blame others. And so we cover up, there's a fault here that was really my fault, but I want to blame somebody else. And as soon as I blame somebody else, now I'm off the hook, I think. And so, you know, one of the things that successful leaders do is they're never blaming others. They're never covering up their weaknesses. They're not troubled by it. They're focused on their strengths, and that's what they're working on. And that's positivity, really, is I have these strengths, and I can't fix these weaknesses. I don't care if they're exposed, because I'm really desired for my strengths, and so I'm going to develop those.
Great. So how important is it to when we consider our legacy now? So we're gonna talk further beyond a leader, a 360 leader, a parent, a grandparent. Let's look way down the road. I've heard you say, 100 years from now, what will my impact have been, right? So when we think about the word legacy, right, does having a personal positivity light within you have impact on that legacy 100 years from now, or on your children or your children's children?
Yeah, one of the things that I discovered recently is that we misuse, when we talk about legacy, we interchange the words impact and influence. And we often then will misuse the
That's
word
true.
Impact. And what I think is really remarkable is if you think about what an impact leaves a mark. It pushes up against something. If you think about like a plane, an airplane falling into the ground, it leaves a mark. Or if you were a racquetball player and you got hit with a racquetball, you know, it leaves a mark on your body. But after a while, that mark goes away. And so when we're creating an impact in our lifetime, we're really working on our legend or what we do. But when we're thinking about our influence, that's when we're working on our legacy. And I really like, you know, an example that I had when I was attending Pepperdine University and getting an MBA. I discovered that there was this man that wanted to build a grove of trees for the future students, and he tried to enroll us all into donating $10,000 so that he could build this grove of trees. So if you gave him $10,000, you would get a tree in your name. And I thought at the time, how stupid is this? You know, I'm not going to give $10,000 for one tree.
Right.
What will that do? And then over the years, I've watched this grove grow. And now, and he did something really interesting because a lot of people did give him $10,000 for a tree, but nobody had their name put on a tree. So there was just this grove of trees that was planted on the campus in Malibu. And now when you walk through that grove of trees, there's incredible shade. There's really nice places to sit and to relax and to take in the view of the ocean and to feel the cool breeze. And that's influence. We may not ever remember who did it, but it's done. And it's there, and it continues to bless the lives of others. And so when I think about my influence, there are a lot of people that I'm influencing right now, some that maybe even listening right now, who will never remember my name, will never, you know, say, I learned this from Andrew, but they'll be blessed by it. And where I will be remembered is in my family with the people that are around me, and they will remember me 100 years from now. But no matter what I do, nobody around me will, you know, I can't even remember who the president was 100 years ago, so nobody's going to remember who I am. But,
right.
But my influence has the potential to be felt if I make things better for others.
Well, and you can have influence instead of impact on how people think and how they develop themselves, how they teach their own children, how they teach their own subordinates within an organization, how they lead, how they guide. When you consider your own future as a service provider, right, as a clinician, when you're sitting down with a client and talking with them and helping them to, I mean, there's a reason they have engaged with you, right? They want your help. They want your guidance. They want your words. What are, if you could share, and this is something that I ask each of my guests, if you could share three key things that you do personally that allow you to do your job more effectively, allow you to have a greater influence. Now, I'm going to be very cautious about how I use the word impact. A greater influence for the future of those relationships. As a recruiter and in the recruiting industry or in the HR industry, we talk a lot about retaining quality, about hanging on to those employees that you have worked so hard to acquire, right? So how do you make sure that those clients, those people that you work with, retain your services? What are some things that you do?
Yeah, so back to the word influence just for a minute. Influence, unlike impact, means to push up against. Influence to flow through. That's the meaning of the word, to flow through. So when I'm working with people, I'm constantly thinking about how can I just be a vehicle or a tool or an influence in the life of this person without having to make an impact. Might say, you know, how can I impact this person? How can I be, you know, the source of good for this person? And so the first thing that I think I do in my work is I get out of the way. I don't have to be the leader when I'm talking with my clients. Instead, I let them be the leader. And I use everything that I am in those conversations, but I really try to use that in a way to draw them out and to allow them. And so I think the very first thing that I do well in my work is I let go of my ego. And I'm getting, the more I do this work, the more I become better at letting go of my ego. And I think that you know, takes me to the second point that I think I do, and that's I'm just very, very courageous in the work that I do. It takes a lot of courage to point out the obvious to people.
Because they don't see
it. Is, that's right.
True.
It's obvious, but they don't see it. And even if they do see it, they think that I can't see it or that anybody else can see it.
Right.
And so they try really hard to disguise it or to hide it. And so I'm very courageous in, you know, thinking about things and allowing people to really see, like, for example, you know, just an example of this is the other day I was working with a client and I asked him what he wanted for his children. And he said he wanted his children to be in a job where they were satisfied and that they had a career that made them happy. And I said, and you're giving them a wonderful example of that, aren't you? Because here's a guy that's tormented in his work and he's not satisfied with his work and he's not happy. And that took a lot of courage to say, but it got us into the framework where we could start to look at what, you know, what he needed in his lifetime right now, so that, because how can you model, how can you expect your children to have something that you've never had for yourself, that you've not had the courage to step aside and go and get it? So for me, having very courageous conversations that you know, are uncomfortable for me and for the person, but because there's so much love in me, and that's the third piece right there, is because there's so much love in me, I'm able to open up and to say, hey, look, you know, this isn't, I'm not being courageous with the face of judgment. I'm being courageous because I love you and because that's why I'm here to help you and to help you make your life better. And when I think about those three things, letting go of my ego, having courage to engage in the big conversations, and then loving people enough to let them live, to let them do what they need to do and to support them and sustain them in whatever choices they make, that's when I'm the most successful in my work.
Great. And Andrew, it's been wonderful to have you as a guest this morning. We don't spend enough time outside of work together either, so we have to rectify that. Well, we're both busy people,
Indeed.
And have families that are growing and changing, and but we need to make time.
Yeah.
So thank you for taking the time to be on HR Latte this morning and sharing your experiences. Any last words of wisdom before I hit my favorite part of the show?
I think the biggest word of wisdom is just what came to us from the great philosophers, Bill and Ted. Be excellent and party on.
I love that. Now I'm going to have to watch that film. Oh, man. Yeah, our brother posted something about Keanu Reeves the other day on Danny did on Facebook. And I'm a big fan of his because I think he is very philosophical, but people don't give him the credit because he does have the Ted voice. So
yeah.
It's hard for him to get past the big adventure. So, but thank you for being.
But he's the one.
He is the one. So, one of my favorite parts of the show that I implemented is that my quick hit fave list. And I call this my selfish part because it's an opportunity for me to learn, for me to grow and develop and learn more about my guests, but also about things I might want to try or might want to do. And it's not a lot of thought has to go into this. I just want to ask you a couple of key questions and maybe they will have influence on me. What is your favorite food? Your favorite food?
My favorite food is black beans.
No way.
Yeah, it is. I feel so good when I eat black beans.
In South America.
And I make them myself now, and I just love black beans. I could eat them every day, and I do.
Well, we're gonna have to share recipes here, I guess. I didn't even know that.
Yeah.
See, this I have to have you on a radio show to find these things out.
And two parts about black beans that are so fun is they taste good and then have this really wonderful after effect that makes everyone smile. So
Think everyone is smiling, Andrew. I was your sister. I grew up with you. I don't think everyone is smiling. So your favorite book?
Wow, right now, I think favorite book of all time or favorite current book?
Well, I let my guests answer any way they would like.
So, of course, the Leading with Your Legacy in Mind has to be high up there just because
well,
it has such an excellent author. But,
and we didn't even talk about that. Andrew has a couple of books out there.
I'm enjoying right now reading a book called Rainmaker Conversations. It's really giving me great insights in how to have beautiful selling conversations, and it's really giving me a good way. And, a classic book that I read recently in the last year that really influenced me was Atlas Shrugged. I mean, wasn't the first time that I read it, but I really enjoyed that. And probably my favorite book of all time would be Les Miserables. I mean, I weep when I read it, and I just love the story.
We are definitely siblings. And your favorite place on earth. Now, this could be a room in your home. It could be a park close by. It could be some remote, beautiful destination location.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to say my home because I know my family would love to hear me say that. I do love to be in my home. But so it's a very close second. But I love to be in the glass house. I love to just be sitting in the silence of the glass house and just looking out, which is, property that we own. It's not so far away from our house, but just looks out. All the walls are glass, and it just gives me really great perspective and inspiration when I'm there. And so that's my favorite place. I really feel renewed when I have a chance to spend hours there without a phone and without anybody talking to me.
It is a beautiful, beautiful location. I don't want to call it a house, maybe a home, but it is where you conduct most of your business, where you write, where you do the Telios experience. And last but not least, what is your favorite thing to do?
I might withhold that, but I might.
You're not the first to answer that way, by the way.
I might say that I love music, and I think my favorite thing to do. I'm really gaining a really great appreciation for it, but I'm really enjoying speaking in front of audiences and really energizing an audience with some of the things that I'm able to think about and so I really feel like I have my biggest influence when I'm in front of an audience of, 20 or 10,000 people, and I'm just able to look at people in the eye and see how the message is influencing them. And
you know,
I like that.
I love that too. It's a great opportunity to really learn about yourself too and refine how you present yourself, how you talk about the subject that you've been assigned or that you have chosen. I'm enjoying that as well. So with that, I'm going to say goodbye and thank you for joining me here today on HR Latte.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
It's been great to conduct this series. I have one more show in the series with Kelly Orchard, who is also a leadership coach, and she'll be joining me on Thursday for the final episode in this series, Positivity at Work, next week. And the month of May, I'll be kicking off the series, Diversity in the Workplace. We're going to talk a great deal about the different things that affect and impact and influence individuals in the workplace if it has anything to do with being different or diverse. And to kick that series off, I will have Torin Ellis will be my guest. I believe it's the 2nd of May, but it's the first Tuesday in May. So please join me for that. Andrew, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thanks all. Enjoy your Tuesday.